our minds. How can we really see when our eyes are blinded to what we really need? They control our minds.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the show. This is Ray and Tay today. Waiting for Ray, but I'm Tay. Tay. Eric Taylor. So listen, you want to join in and have some fun with us on this Monday. Ray should be here shortly. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. And, you know, enjoy. Let's see if this is Ray right here. Ray, you there? So, and enjoy the show. You can hit us up on rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And then also our website, which is very interactive, rayandtaytoday.com, where we just have a lot of lovely tidbits and stuff like that. And, you know, the website is rocking and rolling. Ray, you with us?
Yeah, sorry about that. Having some technical troubles
last
5 minutes, but we're on.
All right, there we go. So Ray's here. And like I said, you know, we're interactive. Also at Facebook and Twitter, it's RAEANDTAY today. And that's at Facebook and Twitter. So, Ray, let them know how we're going to break down this interesting Monday show with all that's going on, NBA, hockey. Break it down for them, man.
Oh, man. So we've got a lot going on today. We've got some breaking news over the weekend. Of course, we had playoff basketball. We'll get into that. But we had some golf action. We had some fun stuff happening in the world of sports. We'll take you through the breaking news that happened in the world of sports. We'll go through the NBA. We're in the second round. Can you believe it? Second round of the playoffs. We've got a segment for you, like we always like to do. We got the segment, You're Not Ready. So Ray and Terry will bring you a couple of items that you may not be ready for. you know, some old, some new, but we'll definitely do it for you. And then we'll end the show with a walkthrough baseball. We'll take you on a tour of MLB. We're getting to 25 games or so in the MLB season. That's starting to add up. So we'll take a little peek at what's happening in Major League Baseball, and I'm sure you'll enjoy the show, but heavy basketball flavor. But before we get into basketball, let's talk about some breaking news.
Well, Ray, listen, I'm going to go right to hockey. I mean, it's heating up the end of the first round for most series. We have Chicago, you know, they won 4-1, and so they'll play Detroit. Detroit won 4-3, Game 7, exciting. So that should be really adventurous. So they won 3-2. So basically you're going to have the Red Wings against the Blackhawks. That's going to be awesome in the West. Then San Jose, they swept at Vancouver, and they will play the L.A. Kings, who started off down 2-0, won 4 in a row to keep their crown alive as defending champs. People didn't think they were going to beat the St. Louis Blues, but let me tell you, the Kings are still alive. So we'll see the Kings against San Jose. And then in the East, it gets interesting. The Penguins, they beat our Islanders, Ray, 4-2.
Yeah, we didn't expect much. It was a 1-8 series.
Yeah, no, I didn't. But, you know, good. Look, we both said it, right? They're headed towards Brooklyn. They made the playoffs for the first time in years, and this is a good start. And they showed up, right? They didn't just flop 4-2, so they fought. And so the Penguins go on to play Ottawa, and they won 4-1 over Montreal. But now, in the bottom part, this is interesting. It's 3-3, Washington against the Rangers, the Capitals against the Rangers, Game 7 tonight. This is what it's all about, 8 p.m. Eastern. Go Rangers, that's all I can say, but this is going to be
two.
A classic. Yeah,
yeah,
well, that's – yeah, and then –
got the big
right,
six match of Toronto and Boston. Two game
yep.
sevens, and the worst part, and again, you know, I hate –
And then they play each other, so the winners play each other.
Well, not – yeah, so that's actually fair in the sense that both teams have that game seven, but I hate to kill hockey, but if you're a hockey fan, you got two game sevens in the first round, and they're going up against each other. right? One.
Well,
is
Boston
seven,
starts at 7. Yeah, I know, Ray. It's so you're gonna it's have hard, right? They're both East Coast cities, so it's hard to, you know, look, they spread it an hour, so at least you're going to see the end of one and then the end of the other game. So, you know, I mean, it's hard, but I think they did the best that they probably could. You know, scheduling is definitely hard, and at least the endings will not, you know, hopefully not be at the same time. So we'll see what happens in hockey. Let them know about El Tigre winning the TPC at Sawgrass, Ray.
Oh, my goodness. So if those of you out there who wrote his obituary and thought he was done,
pay
he's
some
not.
Respect.
He's back. So the one who had the tin cup moment. Did you see tin cup?
Yeah.
The golf.
Everybody.
With Kevin
yeah.
Costner. So the
yeah.
guy who had the tin cup moment was Sergio. Sergio Garcia on 17. You know, the par three at Sawgrass, which you've never. If you've never, I've actually been to that course. I can't say I've played it because I just don't play well enough to get on the course and actually waste my
you
money
ain't play a player.
Beautiful course. No, I've played before, but not on that course. But I've actually been to that
yeah.
course. It's a beautiful course, and it's a beautiful hole. They call it, you know, at times they were calling it the fifth major. But, yeah, he had a 10-cup moment where he – one of them he just fell short. And then on the second shot where he was shooting, you know, at three, so it was what would have essentially been his fourth shot, he had just a bad bounce. And he hit the, you know,
the water again.
And then Tiger just did his thing. He actually had a double bogey, but and so you thought that he was going to, you know, fall back to the pack. But he won, and that's his fourth win of the season.
Yeah.
So Tiger's back.
And this is what, 78 overall? So he needs two more to get to 80 for Sam Snead.
Sam Snead, yeah. His big number's 80.
All time.
To beat Jack, and so
he's
exactly where Jack is at the same age, you know, at 37. They both have 14 majors, and they both, you know, whatever metrics they use, they're pretty much on track.
Well, remember, I told you, I said Tiger would do it. I think he's going to do it. I think he's going to break it, and I think he's going to break all the records. Jack, Sam Snead, I mean, his game is back. I think mentally he's back, and it's really about health. And Tiger wasn't healthy, and people wanted to discredit that and just think it was all mental. But I think with the mental and the health, it spells trouble for Sergio, Bubba, and you know, even Rory and the rest of the gang.
Because, you know, Tiger hadn't won players since 2001. So it's not a course that he plays typically very well. It's not like Firestone or a few other, the Medina. He's got, you know, over in California, he's got a couple courses he plays well. Obviously, he plays well at Augusta, you know, in Georgia. So this isn't, the TPC at Sawgrass isn't one of his favorite courses, and yet he won, and he's one of the very few two-time winners. So, yeah, he's definitely back. So if you're a Tiger fan or if you're a Tiger hater, just know he's back. So it's going to be one of those things where, you know, for the next few majors, it'll probably be like in the old days, Tiger versus the field.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, listen, that's good. And, of course, you know, we'll see, you know, the he won on Mother's Day, and then on Father's Day will be the major for the U.S. Open. So we'll see what happens there. So now in other news, we've got the football minicamps, right? The Jets are smitten over Geno Smith and how he's played.
Oh,
I think it's interesting. We'll see what happens. But, you know, all accounts, Geno looked good. The Jets are looking good with some of their rookies. I think I'm more interested in what's going on with the Eagles, man. Your boy Chip Kelly, I love it. He's changed the diet, the menu. He had five quarterbacks throwing passes to different receivers at once. All the reporters were like, whoa, this is wild and different. You know, he's just about speed, speed, speed. Sometimes they said he was running from the special teams to the offense to the defense. But also, what I loved, Ray, sometimes they said he played center. Chip Kelly himself was snapping the ball to the quarterbacks just to show them the speed that he wants. So that's kind of interesting, you know. And then they talk about the Buffalo Bills with some of their guys, Robert Woods and E.J. Manuel. And, you know, the Bills haven't made the playoffs, the longest drought since 1999. So I think it'll be interesting to see if they sort of, you know, start Tavares or Cobb and let, you know, they talked about the kid, you know, he's still got to get his footwork together, EJ. Let him just come in slowly, Ray, right?
That Knicks resigned today, the GM, Buddy Nix from Buffalo. He's going to do another job. I don't know if this is part of the plan. I mean, he's 73 years old, so I don't know if this is part of the plan, but he drafted, he put the coach in place, and now he's taking another administrative job in the organization.
Yeah, well, you know, and kudos to him, and also, you know, just in terms of quarterbacks out there, the Cardinals, they released Brian Hoyer, so, you know, maybe he'll get picked up somewhere.
Did you see Titus Young got arrested again for the third time this week?
Oh, last week, right? He got another one. Yeah.
No, I think it's number three. So three is the magic number.
Yeah, well, Titus is, you know, the sad thing is that I guess he is in such a depression downspin. I don't think he's going to get another chance in the NFL, and he's going to have to really start from scratch, go to another league, get, you know, just play some good ball, keep your head on straight for a year or two, and then maybe he'll still be young enough to get back into the NFL. And it's just a shame.
What do you think about Rondae Barber? You know, they were just scanning the – you know, he retired. But
Rondae did retire.
Quietly, though, you know?
There was some talk about it at the end of last week. And, I kudos to him. You know, he did it on, I think, on Friday, so we were on Thursday. But, you know, I think what's so great is I think he's sort of borderline, but I think you could put him in the Hall of Fame because, you know, he's got over 40 interceptions and over 20 sacks, and nobody else has done that in NFL history. So to me, that and a Super Bowl ring puts him in the Hall of Fame, although you could never say at any year that he was the first or second best corner. So, you know, top three or four maybe, but, you know. But maybe the ring does it.
Friday on him.
Yeah, definitely. And also, Ray, also real quick, I got to give a shout-out to our Raider fans, right? We got some Raider fans to listen to the show. Tyler Wilson, quarterback from Arkansas, under the radar. They said he was really impressive at Raiders minicamp. So keep an eye out on that, ladies and gentlemen. That should get a little interesting, Ray, just a little, in Raider land to see who winds up, you know, is it Flynn who gets bounced again by another by another rookie? Can you imagine that guy? He'd be like, listen, I don't want to go nowhere where there's any more rookies. So we'll see what happens with the Raiders and how that all plays out. So let's do it, man. Let's talk about the NBA playoffs.
Well, let's start with the controversy of the day, which is apparently Tyson Chandler saying, essentially, we need to move the ball. And then Melo and J.R. Smith, you know, of course, the announcers and all the reporters are instigating. So they're coming over and saying, what do you think about Tyson saying you're not sharing the ball, you're not passing the ball, you're too greedy and you're jacking up too many shots? And he didn't quite say that, but, you know, he did say, look, good teams pass the ball. If you've got a phenomenal scorer like a, you know, Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, Kobe Bryant, you know, and maybe Carmelo is at the low end of that category, but he's certainly there. He said, well, you can sit around and watch them play, but ultimately good teams pass the ball, and they share the ball, and they get good shots. And he said, look, the tape shows that, you know, there were shots for other people to have. And Chandler himself is not really an offensive-oriented guy. So if he's saying that, it's not like J.R. Smith is saying,
he wants to shoot
so
much.
Wide open, yeah. I want to shoot. Tyson Chandler is basically saying, look, to win, this formula is not working. Now, obviously, he's saying it when they're down 2-1 to the Pacers.
And it's the best time to say it because you don't want to wait to be down 3-1.
Yeah.
Listen, Ray, I think you're right. I think, you know, they said that they would probably try to settle this all and talk about it in private. To be honest with you, I have been saying that they need to switch the starting lineup. I think it does make a difference. I think Melo gets tired easier when you have him matched up against West and Shumpert against George. It's just too much size and weight, and it puts us at a disadvantage. I don't care when you bring Martin or JR in, if it's at the 7-minute mark, 8-minute mark, you're already letting them play a certain amount of time where you potentially can get in foul trouble. Offensively, yeah, it might spread the court for more shooting, but it hasn't worked where it's giving us any real advantage. So we need to stop it, start Martin, start Copeland, whatever you do, let Melo play against George and not have to work so hard against David West. And, you know, I think, look, I mean, we're down 2-1. The reality is we're not shooting great, but at the same time, we've got to get to the free throw line, right? We've got to get inside. The Knicks have got to do something where, you know, maybe you just say, let's start Amari. You know, people might not be ready for it, but maybe he can't be ready for it mentally or, you know, physically. But if he's going to play 10 to 15 minutes, he played 9 minutes last game, you know, maybe you let him play the beginning of the first quarter, let him play the first 3 minutes, and then you bring in Prigioni or Kidd or you know, whatever you want to do.
I think, well,
I don't know.
The Knicks are taking, you know, we need to be objective here. We can't say we. The Knicks are taking difficult shots, contested shots. And I think part of that is goes back to Tyson's comment, which is move the ball. And the formula that helped propel the Knicks to success in the first third of the season and the second third of the season, or the last third of the season, I should say, which is move the ball and get open shots for your shooters, and then make it easier. Now, granted, playoff basketball is different. Indiana's a pretty good defensive team, and they have size. So you're not going to get many easy shots, but you need to get easier shots than just isolation plays that run the shot clock down and then contested jumpers. I mean, you can do better than that. Even if the Knicks have to, you know, like you say, change the rotation a little bit, I think the mindset, they don't need to do that much differently. Just remember what propelled them to success earlier in the season.
Right, the extra pass.
Yeah, and I think too much is, you know, it's almost like, oh, it's you have to play playoff basketball this way. And I'm glad the Knicks have Carmelo Anthony. I'm glad they have an offensive go-to guy. And I'm glad they have an isolation play. But you don't have to do it every possession, right? Not every possession is the fourth quarter, you're down one with 50 seconds to go, and you need a basket. I mean, you should be able to move the ball and create easier shots for your teammates. And that's one of the reasons, my guess, is that Mike Woodson is holding on with his teeth to this Prigioni, you know, Kidd and Felton rotation. He wants to have passers, you know, and creators in the game just in case we do actually move the ball, or they do actually move the ball and create opportunities outside of Carmelo.
Yeah. No, I can see that, and I think Shumpert's going to have to be more aggressive. J.R. Smith is playing like John Starks, and I think he's got to just stop, just throwing up these jumpers. Also, today in practice, we didn't have Martin, Shumpert, and J.R. Smith, you know. So, I mean, guys are a little under the weather. You know, we'll see. I think when it comes down to tomorrow night, obviously for the Knicks, it's going to have to be one of those efforts where they got to get a good lead off the start. They can't, you know, let the crowd get into it. They can't, you know, get into foul trouble, whether it's Chandler or Melo. And you got to have, you know, you got to do some screen and rolls. And whether you do it with Tyson and Felton or whether you're doing it even with Melo and Felton, you've got to try to do some different things so that way you can get some penetration to the basket because we don't have a specific post-up threat. You know, and I think the Knicks can win the game, but I got to tell you, man, we've got to get on the boards. 31-20 on the boards, and, you know, you have all these offensive rebounds. You know, Hibbert had 8 offensive rebounds out of his, like, what, 14? It's ridiculous. You know, we've got to find a way and even get Hibbert in foul trouble. And so maybe you just post up Tyson and see if he can, you know, foul, get him, you know, to draw a foul, or even when Amari gets in there, focus inside. We've got to, you know, do something with this. So since we started with the Knicks Pacers and tomorrow night's games, let's, you know, continue on with that because we have the games tonight. But let's look at, I guess, what happened yesterday and what will happen, you know, game 5 Tuesday, which will be the Spurs and Warriors. This is 2-2 now, right? And you could say the Warriors should have won game 1 and the Spurs should have won game 4, but whatever it is, it's 2-2, however we get there, right? So this is probably going to wind up going 7, but I got to say, look, Parker and Curry are both playing a little banged up, so that's a wash. But, you know, even banged up, Curry still, you know, contributed with his 22. But to me, I love Barnes with his 26 and Jack. Jack is such a veteran, and he's so clutch. And how about Bogut with the 18 rebounds, ladies and gentlemen, and playing some defense on Duncan? You know, he's sort of the most valuable poet on the MIC. And David Lee. Does Derrick Rose watch David Lee? I mean, come on. This is like a hero's performance, right?
The hip pointer versus an ACL. But, yeah, we'll get to Derrick Rose in a minute. But, yeah, it's nice to be young, too, because you were just mentioning Harrison Barnes played 51 minutes, as did Klay Thompson. 51 minutes. Now, granted, it went to overtime, but there were only 53 minutes in the game. So he played 51 of 53 minutes. So it's nice to be young. And then I guess San Antonio just laid an egg in that overtime period. They just couldn't.
They did. Lose by 10, yeah. 97-87. Well, you know what I find with San Antonio that's interesting, though? It's, you know, they start Tiago, but most of the time they're playing the big three, Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker, with Leonard and Green. And I actually like that lineup. But, you know, I just wonder, can they hang enough with the Warriors? Because it seems like Draymond Green, whether he's with Leonard or Danny Green, is keeping things alive on the boards more for Golden State, and Carl Landry is as well. You saw Golden State get a lot of opportunities, second shot opportunities in the, you know, end of the fourth and in the overtime that sort of propelled them to the victory. And, you know, it's hard for me to imagine the Spurs losing, but I like the energy of the Warriors, and maybe they'll pull it out. This one, to me, I'm at a loss with, you know, I've gone back and forth. Initially I had the Spurs, and then I was like, oh, well, maybe Golden State will do it. I just don't know. But I know as a fan, you got to love watching these guys play. The Splash Brothers, then, you know, Parker comes back, and it's like, look, I'm the most, you know, I'm the man. Don't forget about me. And the battle continues, and the battle of coaching. You know, how do you think Mark Jackson, I got to give him credit. I think he's holding his own with Pop, don't you?
No, he's definitely holding his own. And I think with Mark Jackson, it's more, you know, young players and motivating. And he does some X's and O's. And I think with Pop, it's more finding the right rotations, definitely X's and O's, and trying to play in spurts because he knows he's got an older team and he can't go 100 miles an hour against Golden State. And by the way, they learned that lesson pretty quickly last year when they just ran out of gas in every second half against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So Popovich has got an interesting, you know, coaching task ahead of him, and as does Mark Jackson. Now, Mark Jackson also is playing around with his rotations a little bit. You know, you saw we mentioned Harrison Barnes getting his 51 minutes. Well, that was at the expense of Draymond Green, who was a great addition to the roster, it turns out, especially for the playoffs because he's so versatile. You know, he's a matchup problem. If you can't exploit him, and they don't let Kawhi Leonard, you know, do much in terms of, you know, one-on-one and sort of exploiting Draymond Green, but his ability to hit jumpers and his size and his ability to pass gives Mark Jackson a big, you know, boost, especially given that he lost David Lee for a while. So he was, you know, he did a nice job. And Carl Landry, you know, starting or off the bench, depending on, you know, obviously depending on David Lee's health. But I think Mark's done a great job of using what he's got, you know, getting the most out of his players and the rotations. And, you know, like you said, Bogut got his 18 rebounds in 28 minutes.
It's incredible,
so,
right?
Wow. So that's a nice little dilemma Mark Jackson has, right? He's got young guys. He's got a backcourt that's quick. And then if Bogut, Lee, Landry can give him that size and Barnes and Draymond Green can give him that sort of flexibility on the wing, a tough matchup for San Antonio. It is a tough matchup. Now, San Antonio has two out of the next three at home, so you got to figure all
that's
things
their advantage.
San Antonio has an advantage. They worked all year to get that advantage. So two games at the AT&T Center if it goes seven. But yeah, this is a great series. I love this series.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, before we get into the Heat, Bulls, and the Thunder, Grizzly, I do want to read an email. This is Michael from Jersey City, And Michael, Jersey City, yeah. Michael says, mm-hmm. Well, Michael says, Ray and Tay, are the Grizzlies now the team to beat in the Western Conference with the way that they're playing in the post from Gasol and Randolph? Okay.
Wow.
Thank you.
That's a great question. And it's especially apropos because we were killing them because of the Rudy Gay trade.
Right. Well, listen, hey, you know, and that sort of takes us to our next thing. But thank you, Michael, and keep listening. He said he always catches the Monday show, so I guess he's listening right now. That's great. All right, cool. So, we'll go to the Bulls, but since Michael sent in this question, let's talk about the Grizzlies first, the later game tonight. This series, Ray, I got to say, I don't know if – look, to me, Durant doesn't have enough help. Ibaka's got 13 a game. Nobody else is in double figures. Everybody's at 5, you know, 7 and 4, and it's just Durant with 28 points a game. So, you know, when you've got the balance, I think, that the Grizzlies have, and, you know, to me, I love – how they're playing. The interior passing from Gasol and Randolph is always, you know, great all season. They're not scoring as much as they normally do. Gasol's at 14, Randolph's at 15, but then you've got the balance, right? You've got Tayshaun Prince, the veteran, at 10. You're getting 8, almost 9 a game from Tony Allen, and then Conley at 14 a game. So he's, you know, playing really well. I think the Grizzlies might be the team to beat. I mean, really, to answer the question, I don't think Oklahoma is going to be able to stay with them, and I think that they will probably finish out the grindhouse 3-1 and then go back to OKC and either win there or win back at the grindhouse in game 6 and win the series 4-2. So, but commend Durant, right? I mean, I think he's doing all that he can do to keep them alive. I just don't think he has enough help. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. And I think that, you know, it's like a tale of two cities, especially offensively. The Grizzlies have essentially 5 guys in double figures. And for Oklahoma City, it's really just Durant, Kevin Martin, and Ibaka. And then you don't know what you'll get from – you know, Jackson and Cephalosha, and Derek Fisher is, 38, 39. You know, you've got a situation where if you're Oklahoma City, you need somebody else to step up. But not only to step up, but to step up consistently. Because if your eye is on an NBA Finals again, you have to win, you know, 3 more games in this series, 4 games in the next series. So you need to win 7 more games. You're not going to do that with Durant and then hoping that a second or third scorer emerges. So it's tough. It's tough for Oklahoma City. You become, you know, we talked about this before, you become reliant on 2 guys and you lose one of your big 2 and you've got some issues, especially because for some reason this Oklahoma City team that is usually a pretty good defensive team is not clamping down on Memphis, who is not considered to be a great offensive team. But they're doing enough to score, and these scores have been in the 90s, so they're doing enough to get their scoring up. So they definitely got their work cut out for them, Oklahoma City. But could you imagine if it is an Oklahoma City Golden State final? So Oklahoma City was 5. So it's right. I mean, Memphis was 5. So if it's a Memphis Golden State final, you'd have 5 versus 6.
Hey, it's poetic justice, man. You got to be healthy. You got to play hard, discipline. But once you get in there, and we all know this, anybody has a shot to win it. And you just got to play ball. You know, so I definitely think tonight Memphis will pull it out. And you know, it's going to be fun. We'll definitely see. I think Gasol and Zebo are too much with Conley. So let's get to Chicago. That game, man. Miami just was so. Look, I want to be like the minute we talked about Bosh being whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. 20-19, Ray. I guess he's a Hall of Famer. I was like, okay, Bosh. I guess you heard
the show.
Yeah, I mean. Kudos to him, right, and that team, because the reality is Bosh steps up when Wade's a little banged up or Ray's off. the unsung hero, who I think has sacrificed the most, he steps up and does whatever they need him to do. You want me to score? You want me to get rebounds? The guy's kind of incredible. I think the blood is in the water. I think D. Rose does not play. We still don't have Dang and Heinrich, and I think 2-1 becomes 3-1, and then they go to Miami and finish them and win the series 4-1. I just they're too banged up, Ray. They're too banged up. And I think mentally Miami is in their head now. The series is getting out of hand with the physicalities. And LeBron can do whatever he wants to do. And Norris Cole is the key. And he's slowing down Nate enough that if Battier and Lewis or Miller or Ray Allen get hot shooting, it's a wrap. There's nothing they can do.
Yeah, this is one of those series that, you know, you hate to say it's a blessing in disguise because you never like to lose, but because Miami lost game one, they now look at themselves in the mirror and say, hey, guys, we want to win a championship. Now, the Bulls are a good team, and Thibodeau's a great coach, but really, they don't have Rose, they don't have Heinrich, they don't have Dang. What's going on here? We should beat this team, you know, 10 out of 10 times. It's probably what they're saying to themselves, certainly with the depleted Chicago roster. So there's no doubt that you woke a sleeping tiger or a sleeping giant, and Miami should win out, right? They may, you know, maybe Chicago sneaks one. We both predict 4-2 Miami, but maybe Chicago sneaks one. But at the end of the day, especially with the lack of talent or the talent that's not there, that's sitting on the sideline in suits, yeah, Miami's, you know, and I think that, again, losing that game one was the best thing for them, so now they're not looking past them to the Eastern Conference Finals, which who knows who that will be because the Knicks and Pacers are still kind of locked up. That series might go seven. But Miami.
Yeah. Basically, right? Miami is so, you know, and the thing is that Wade is such a difference maker in terms of putting them in a whole nother category. When Wade is feeling 100% healthy, you realize when you watch these other teams play that the Heat and Pacers, I mean, that the Knicks and Pacers just really don't have enough to, I think, score and compete with the Miami Heat when Miami's at its, you know, supreme best and healthiest and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think we both said six, but I won't be surprised if they finish them off in five and just call it a day in this series. And I don't know. And it's no knock on Rose. I understand the situation. But if you're feeling okay, can you play tonight? Can you just play tonight? I mean, can you give us Amari's 9 minutes? Can you give us David Lee's heroic minutes with the hip thing, bone, meat hanging off the muscle or the bone, whatever he's going through, his hip, you know, tear? I mean, I don't know, Ray. I respect it because, you know, you got to keep your greatest player for the rest of his career. But he probably wouldn't get hurt. You know, I don't know. I just think it's about if you could give us a couple minutes, if you're practicing and you're looking that good, the best guy in practice, you see your team out there struggling, maybe you can tie up the series if you play tonight, and it'd be 2-2.
Well, here's the problem that a lot of Bulls fans and a lot of folks in Chicago are having with Derrick Rose is that it's mental. He's been signed out. He's been checked out by the doctors. They signed off on it. The coaching staff, the medical staff, everybody, maybe he needs to bring in Dionne Warwick or somebody, you know, the Friends Network, and just talk to somebody because it's all Derrick Rose. If Derrick Rose is ready, he's on the court. So, you know, again, the worst thing happened to him is probably Iman Shumpert, where they got hurt on the same day, and the fans aren't even expressing, you know, dissatisfaction that he's not, you know, Adrian Peterson. But they're saying, look at Iman Shumpert, and like you say, David Lee, and look at all these other people playing banged up. The medical staff has cleared you. So for some reason, maybe this kid has never really gotten injured in his career, and he's having trouble logically with coming back at an elite level. But I think that, you know what, maybe you're not at an elite level for this playoff series. Maybe you're just there for 80% of the old Derrick Rose. But it'll give
and,
your
and
fans
no one's gonna rip
and
you
your
for
teammates
it.
Such a boost. Yeah, I mean, nobody expects you to come out and be in all-star form, you know, MVP form. So if you came out and you were 75-80% of your old self, first of all, you would help in the rotation. Second of all, you would draw some attention away from some of your other scorers. Maybe you can get Bellinelli some offense. Maybe you can get Boozer some offense. Maybe you can get a tip in or you know a put back for Noah. And the fact that Dang is out, the fact that Heinrich is banged up, you know, even more you need Derrick Rose on the court. So the fact that it's
definitely
totally mental, I can't get into his head, but the fact that he's totally psychological. Look, I hope that he puts it behind him and he's ready for mini camp, training camp and all that next year. But the fans of Chicago, you know, they're getting frustrated and you know, unless you've walked in another man's shoes or in another man's head, you can't really get it. But it's tough because all of his people. I don't remember another case like this of a guy who got injured and was cleared. It's usually the other way around that these guys are chomping at the bit to get back in the game, and the medical staff has to hold you back, and the coaches have to
hold
you back.
They had to hold Shumpert back. They had to hold Shumpert back. Shumpert was rushing to get back. So anyway, well let's take a little break, and we'll come back with our segment. You're Not Ready, Ray and Tay.
Whose fault?
Yes.
We're back, and we're ready, but I don't know if you're ready.
All right. Well, I'm ready. Here we go. You're not ready, and I'm starting off with, I'm going to go first. Normally Ray goes first. I'm going to go first. For me, this young man, and I'm not going to talk about anything negative. He's a Golden State Warrior. He's a rookie. And his name is Harrison Barnes. He's also a Tar Heel. This year, he averaged 9.4 rebounds, a little bit over 1 assist a game. But what you're not ready for is what he is doing now. So in the playoffs, Harrison's been kind of interesting. He's, you know, in the first, like, 10 games or so, you know, overall, he was kind of, like, doing what he did in the regular season. But he had, like, 5.4 rebounds, 1.1 assists. He was giving you the 9 points. And you're like, okay. And you know, he was shooting not so great, 39%. But this is, you know, what the kid was doing, you know, and who he was during the regular season, 9.2 points a game. But in this series, in these four games, Harrison Barnes, right now, you are not ready for Harrison Barnes. Playing 44 minutes a game, right? He was playing 26 before. 44 minutes, shooting 40%. We can improve on that. But he's scoring 17.5 points a game and giving you 8.3 rebounds a game, 1.5 assists. To me, right now, you are not ready for Harrison Barnes, ladies and gentlemen. He stepped up with 26 the other night. I mean, he had 26 and 10. I mean, he basically won the game. He was clutch. When Curry's ankle was hurting, it was Barnes that came down, hit a big three. He had some nice defensive stops on Green and on Leonard, played great defense. And Harrison Barnes has been consistent in this Spurs series as being a solid third scoring option, you know, for Golden State and for Mark Jackson. So for me, what I like to see, and I think he's going to continue to be the difference for the Warriors to pull the upset, knock off the Spurs, and outshine whoever he's got to outshine. And Harrison Barnes is the man, and you are not ready for Harrison Barnes. My boy, a Tar Heel. Ladies and gentlemen, Harrison Barnes, you're not ready.
So I am not ready for Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes is all of 20 years old, right?
Love it.
So he's a young kid on the block.
Yeah, man.
Definitely bringing it up for all the youngsters. Now, I'm going to give you somebody who is 43 years old, who in November will be 44.
Ouch.
You are not ready for
he's older than us.
Mariano Rivera. Now, this guy was shagging balls last May. and blew out his ACL. He was going to retire last year, and he went out and decided, you know what, I don't want to go out like that. I want to go shag balls and play with my teammates and do, you know, and do my thing. So Mariano comes back, has the knee surgery, comes back, and is basically the best reliever in baseball again at age 43 with a you know, repaired ACL. So the guy just continues to be unbelievable. I mean, we'll get into his postseason stats, but his stats this year, right, he's got a 1.85 ERA. He's pitched in 17 games. He's got 15 saves, and he's got a whip of under one. So he continues to be Major League Baseball's all-time leading saves leader with 623 saves. And we haven't even talked about the playoffs. I mean, this guy in his playoff career is really, you know, if this guy is in a first ballot unanimous pick for Hall of Fame, you know, I don't know who is, because
who is?
He is by far, we talked about this before, he is at his position by far the best of anybody possibly in any sport. The difference between he and the next guy at his position. So you don't have that anywhere in baseball, and I don't think you have that even anywhere in sports. I mean, the difference between Kobe and LeBron, or Kobe and Michael Jordan, if Michael Jordan's the best, even the best two-guard, the difference between he and Kobe is not as great as the difference between Mariano and the next reliever. So pick any position in any sport, you know, centers in hockey, centers in basketball, you know, baseball, football, running backs, quarterbacks. There are so many people that are bunched together that when you say who are the top players at their position, you can list 3, 4, 5 guys. Not a pitcher.
Exactly.
And the fact that he's doing this at 43 years old is unbelievable. I mean, this guy has just mastered one pitch. And in doing so, has, you know, everybody knows it's coming. And he even, you know, he's even so generous, he'll teach people. He'll teach other, you know, the All-Star games, you know, those.
Well, listen, he was about to teach Jabba something for, you know, he had to shush Jabba, and Jabba got all crazy, like, don't shush me. But evidently they squashed their beef, but he was about to give Jabba a knuckle sandwich, yo. So.
Oh, man, what was that all about?
Listen, it's just funny. But listen, we swept the Royals, and right now we're splitting. You know, we lost the first game today with the Cleveland Indians. So, and we're up in the second game, 1-0. So.
Right, 1-0, lost the game 1-0. So Phelps pitched a great game for the Yankees, throwing 115 pitches, but only to be outdueled by Justin Masterson, who's now 6-2. So Cleveland splits the doubleheader 1-0, and Yankees are up 1-0 in the second inning. Hopefully Mariano will get a chance to increase.
To get another save.
Yeah, well, he's the AL leader with 15 saves, tied with Grilly from Pittsburgh as the major league leader in saves. So what can you say? Mariano Rivera, you're not ready for a 43-year-old with a reconstructed knee being the best reliever in baseball.
Gosh, you know, I love it, man. And that's the perfect segue, Ray. It takes us into... You know, let's go around major leagues and baseball, and we got to start right there in the Bronx and talk about our Yankees. The best record in the AL, second best record behind, you know, we were a half a game, now a game behind Texas, but we're in first place in the AL East, and I'm just really blown away, I think, mostly by the fact that the Yankees don't have their best players, you know, offensively, but the way that they're pitching, you know, we're sort of able to, you know, manufacture whatever we need. And you got Cano hitting his 10th home run yesterday, and Vernon Wells, who they, you know, got in a trade right before the season started. Remember, we were like, oh, they got the veteran Vernon. And, well, Vernon just is, you know, hitting 9 home runs, you know. I mean, what a clutch pickup.
Travis Hafner, Lyle Overbay, they've all been great pickups.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. And as a Yankee fan, you got to be thrilled. You got to be concerned to, you know, wonder, can they keep it together? Can they keep it going? But, you know, you don't know about Jeter, but you know Granderson's coming back. You know, hopefully within the, you know, next couple of weeks. You know, he should have been back, they said, sometime in May. But, you know, I'm pretty excited, and for me, you know, you laugh because at the bottom of the AL is the Toronto Blue Jays, who at what 15-24, everybody was like, "Oh, the Blue Jays are going to do this, they're going to do that," and they're not doing much of anything, right? I don't know.
Third worst record in the American League. So out of 30 teams, they are 15 teams, I guess. They are 13th.
Yeah,
they have the roster. They have the roster. They just haven't been producing. I mean, what can you say about these guys? They just, you know what? They're just terrible. Their offense is terrible. Their pitching's been terrible. I think they have the worst behind Houston. They have the worst pitching in the American League. And you can't not pitch in the AL East. So you're going to face the Yankees, Baltimore, Tampa Bay, and Boston 18 times, 19 times a year. You have to pitch. So they're not. They're second worst in the American League in pitching. And then their offense, which was supposed to be so, you know, exciting when they get Jose Bautista back and Encarnacion and Jose Reyes, and they can't score either. So yeah. They are, along with Chicago's the worst, but along with Houston, the Angels, surprisingly enough, but Houston, the Angels, and Minnesota are right in that, you know, bottom tier. Seattle also can't score. They're in that bottom tier of runs, you know, run scored. So if you can't score,
yeah,
you're giving up
your
second most runs in the American League, then you have, you know, a run differential of 47. They've only played, 40 games, 39 games, and they have a run differential of 47. So they're just terrible.
Well, you know what I think is interesting, and obviously, you know, they're having a doubleheader, and it's nice, right, a day-night doubleheader, Yankees at Cleveland. Well, Cleveland, they just happen to be in first place in the Central at 21-15, and so they have a half-game lead on Detroit, and it's nice to see teams like Cleveland and KC, you know, play, you know, better ball. Obviously, the Yankees spanked KC this weekend, so they're two back, but you know, these teams in the AL that are sort of stepping up, and then, of course, we still got Texas, at, you know, leading the AL West at 24-13 with the best record in the American League. You know, I think so far this season, one of the biggest surprises to me is sort of the collapse of the Los Angeles Angels. At 14-23, they are even behind Seattle, and they're barely above Houston. They are really, Ray, they're struggling. I mean, obviously last night they played well this weekend against the White Sox, but then the White Sox had a great pitching performance last night from your boy. I forget his name. Was it Chris Spanda? What's his name? But he basically, you know, shut the whole AL, the Anaheim, the Los Angeles Angels lineup down. And, you know, they were able to, the White Sox were able to get one game in the series. But the Angels, they're struggling. They're struggling to pitch. They're struggling offensively.
Let me ask you a question. They've played 37 games out of 162. At what point do you start to panic or do you start to make changes?
I don't know if Moreno is going to do that. You know, people
have talked
about
maybe not at an owner level, but at a manager.
Well, I'm saying,
well,
but people have talked about Socha. People have said, look, listen, Socha's been consistently one of the best managers in baseball. But you look, Moreno's the last 3 years has spent so much money on this team, and you know, there's no results. They haven't made the playoffs in a while. So you know, I don't know. To me, I think with the Angels, you got to stand pat. You know, I mean, Ibar's been injured at you know, and with his hamstring. He's back, but he's not playing every day. You know, they have some other issues with pitching, you know, with Weaver, and I think
see,
you got to be patient.
If it was just pitching, you could live with it because you could say, okay, we sacrificed, we sort of sold our soul to the devil, a team that was built around pitching and defense and speed, sort of that Mike Socha, the ex-Dodger, you know,
yeah,
player
first to third,
Tommy Lasorda, you know, that kind of baseball. Now they sold their soul and wanted to bring in offense, so they brought in back-to-back years Albert Pujols and Josh Hamilton, and then to their credit, they had Mike Trout and Mike Trumbo come up through the roster, you know, through the farm system. So you figure, all right, so now they're an offensive team. So at least if they were scoring, you could say, okay, we knew we had a deficiency on pitching, but they're not even scoring. So that's the part that's troublesome more than anything, is this roster of Kendrick and Trout, Trumbo, Hamilton, Pujols. You said Ibar got hurt. That's true, but, you know, you've got a lot of talent on this team, and they're just not doing it.
Well, I'll say this.
I guess it starts with Hamilton and Pujols. I mean, Hamilton's batting.
No, you're right, but I think
Pujols batting .234.
No, you're right. You're right. You know what? But I'll tell you this. You got to be patient, because what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Nobody's going to take these contracts. So be patient. Let, you know, Trout, I think he'll get it going. They moved him from left to center. I think, you know, now he's, you know, playing solidly back at center. I think he'll get it together. You know, maybe he bulked up a little bit too much in strength. Some people said it was a little bit of fat, but he got some muscle, you know. I think they just got to start to be more aggressive. And I don't think that they can't just wait for the long ball. And so I think Socha knows that, and I think they're going to sort of get in a place where they start, you know, really trying to, you know, move people over and manufacture runs. And I think once they do that, they'll get things going. And you just got to be patient. But, you know, for me, I'm more interested right now in even some of the stories in the National League, because I think that at the end of the day, the Los Angeles Angels are not going to make the playoffs in the East. I mean, in the American League, it'd be a long shot to me, but that's okay. Because look, you know, maybe you get another pitcher next year, and maybe, you know, everybody gets healthy, and maybe you wind up turning it around. I mean, their division, they're not that far out of it, that you can't just, you know, try to win your division at the end of the day. But it depends on what happens with the Rangers, because the Rangers look like they're not going anywhere. The Rangers are playing some great ball. But what about the National League? What are you thinking about? Obviously, the Braves and the Nats, just talking about the AL East, they're sort of battling. But it seems like the Phillies are sort of hanging around. They're only a couple games back, four games back. Do you think the Phillies or the Mets at 5.5 back, do you think either one of those teams realistically have a shot to catch the Braves in the AL East?
No, I don't think so. The Braves or the Nats. Again, I thought the Nats would win 100 games, so I still think the Nats could win 93, 94 games. And they're clearly the class of the NL East, the Braves and the Nationals. I think the Philadelphia Phillies, especially losing Halladay, and now this explains why he hasn't pitched well in a year and a half.
Well, it does. The injury.
He's having some health issues. So I think that Philly, even with Halladay, has some age and some limitations on their roster, but without Halladay, for sure, I think they fall back. You know, they're about a .500 team, and you know the Mets and Miami are just no good. I mean, Miami's no good, and the Mets at least have, you know, some excitement with Matt Harvey. They've got a roster that, you know, really nobody in baseball covets, you know, with the exception of a few players here and there. I don't like the Mets roster offensively. I think they have, you know, too many moving parts. I don't like the outfield.
But there's some of the young players. You got to like maybe Buck and Tejada.
Yeah, Buck
and
is
Duda.
great addition. And kudos to
Mike Davis
getting him out of Toronto in that trade. And Ike Davis, again, you want to see his average be a little higher, but he is a run.
He's a little inconsistent.
That lineup. And even David Wright, you know, you expect him to be a 310, 320 hitter. He's adding, what, 297. So
he can't stay healthy, though. He's out of the lineup today.
Yeah. And Daniel Murphy got better defensively, but ultimately he's an offensive player. Tejada, Buck, Duda, Ike Davis. You know, the roster's okay, but that's not a five.
No,
really
no.
A five.
They need, I would say, a solid reliever, and they need, you know, maybe two more hitters. You know, somebody in that outfield that's really going to drive in some
Darryl
runs.
Strawberry and Lenny Dykstra to come through the system again.
Oh, keep it real. Hey, how about this, man? Shout out to the Giants, man. They just continue. They put it on the Braves this weekend, and they really played some great ball. And the Giants are now 23-15, and you know they're two up on the D-backs, but the D-backs keep playing good ball too at 21-17. So it's nice to see the Giants, who right now are, you know, basically the second best record in the NL, and of course, you know, we can't skip over the 23-13 St. Louis Cardinals. I mean, who expected? Gosh, they just continue. They have the best record in baseball, Ray. I mean, the St. Louis Cardinals.
I thought the Reds.
And Mott's not even
high.
Playing. They still don't have Mott back yet.
Yeah, I thought,
you know,
that St. Louis team, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's all that Bush beer that they drink over there at the stadium.
There's something,
but something's in the air in St. Louis because they just consistently put out a winning product. You know, I thought Cincinnati would run away and hide with that division just because you look up and down the roster, Cincinnati's roster is so much better. But then, as you mentioned, you go to the NL West and you look at San Francisco and Arizona being the class of that division. Colorado at one point had the best record in the National League. I think they had the best record in baseball for one day or 2 days.
They're 20-17. They're hanging around.
But the Dodgers. So baseball is just miserable in L.A. The Angels are 14-23. The Dodgers are 15-21. And not only that, but there's an arms race in L.A. because they're both spending money like they haven't spent before. Magic Johnson and his crew spending $2 billion, you know, to buy the Dodgers, and they have the biggest roster, so they're the Yankees, you know, Yankees West, and certainly with the Angels with their big signings of Pujols and Hamilton, these guys are each in the top five or six in salary, and
they're regretting it though.
Together, maybe, they have 29 wins.
Yeah, and maybe they're not spending wisely enough, you know. I think sometimes, look, you look at the Oakland A's, you look at the Indians, you look at some of these, look at the Pirates. Some of these smaller market teams who are doing really well, you know, they don't have the big bats and they don't have the big rosters. But you know what? They're in the mix. And kudos to the Pirates because maybe finally they get a chance to maybe get a wild card this year if they could hold on, you know, playing real well right now. And then look at the Indians. You know, maybe the Indians have done it the right way, Ray. I mean,
Tito Francona.
You gotta love Tito, man. We both love him, but I also like the A's
roster, and we just didn't like that roster for the Indians. But good for them.
But Bob Brenly said it on our show, man. He, you know, his good friend Melvin, Bob Melvin, is, you know, the A's are sort of hanging in there in the AL, and all they got to do is hang around enough that they can either, you know, wind up trying to steal that division in August and September, or, you know, stay around to maybe, you know, get that last wild card and, you know, and also get healthy. They've had some injuries as well. You know, look, like any sport, right? We talk about the NBA playoffs, football, baseball. It's a long season. You got to stay healthy, and you got to get healthy. If you're not healthy in the beginning, like the Yankees, right, who are holding the fort, but, you know, they're going to get tired. Can they hold the fort long enough for these guys to get back? And that's what's got to happen. You got to get healthy at the right time. And so we'll see how it plays out for, you know, teams like the Yankees or even the Angels. And look, Ray and Tay, we're here, and we'll definitely keep you updated. So we'll be back on another great show. We will be back on Thursday, just for some scheduling, and we'll be on Thursday 1 p.m., kind of early, 1 p.m. Eastern. So just listen out and always, you know, check out on rayandtaytoday.com, you know, our thoughts and what we're doing, and on Twitter. But we will be back Thursday 1 o'clock and update you on these series, man. I mean, come Thursday, things could be really interesting as we see how the NBA playoffs play out. And then tonight we got the Rangers, Capitals Game 7, and then Toronto and Boston.
Toronto, yeah.
So I'll take the Rangers, and I'll take the Bruins. What are you picking?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to go contrary. I'm going to go with the Capitals and the Bruins.
Capitals and Bruins. Okay. So you got the Bruins and I got Bruins.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, good show. And thanks for listening. Hey, I got to send a shout out, man. You know, our boy that we lost May 1st, Kwame Ohene Frimpong, today would have been his birthday. Happy birthday, Kwame. I know you're listening. And just shout out to everybody who's been listening. We really appreciate it. And we will see you or hear you and you hear us Thursday. 1 o'clock Eastern.
Spoken sports with friends. Thanks for listening.
Peace. Yep. Ray and Tay, we're out.